My name's Mike Rowe, and this is my job.
I explore the country looking for people who aren't afraid to get dirty.
What's the bottom line? Are we going to squeeze the poop out of a dog?
Yes.
Hardworking men and women who earn an honest living doing the kinds of jobs that make civilized life possible for the rest of us.
Now get ready to get dirty.
Coming up on Dirty Jobs, I'm in Washington State to build a Cobb home. They're made by hand and feet. I learned that cob is a British term for loaf.
And it's heavy.
But not the kind that you slice up into a sandwich.
This is a cow manure.
Then, a church in Northern California has a swarm of uninvited guests. So I help roll out the unwelcome wagon with David the Bee Man. With David on the job, those bees don't have a prayer. And later, I go to a Mexican restaurant to make my own gas.
So when you're running down the street burning Diego's,
it generally makes people hungry when they smell my exhaust.
Oh, God.
Today I've come to Joyce, Washington, up on the Olympic Peninsula, to help build a house. But this is not like any construction site I've seen before. No power drills, no power saws, and the construction workers are unusual too. That one's about 6 years old. And that one over there is about 60. And that one has a baby on her back. No hard hats, no steel-toed shoes. In fact, they're not wearing shoes at all. They're dancing barefoot in the mud. It's enough to make you wonder, what the hell's going on here? So this is Conrad, and I would guess you're the general contractor?
Well, I'm more the teacher here.
The teacher?
Yeah.
What is happening exactly as we speak right now?
We are seeing a group of people here mixing cob material.
Cob, C-O-B?
C-O-B.
Yeah. Like the salad or like corn on the...
It's like corn on the cob, although it has nothing to do with corn on the cob.
Yeah, because aside from not seeing any power or drills or anything like that, I don't see any cob per se.
There's no cob per se. No, cob is actually a word that comes from England that means lump or loaf. When they made building material like this in England, they would make them into cobs, about the size of a loaf. And they did that so it was easy to transport it.
What exactly is in it?
Clay soil that we just dig up from the ground, a bit of sand and a bit of straw.
The foundation, it looks like, has already been laid on the home that's being built.
It's a regular poured concrete foundation.
But everything else in the house is this cob material.
That's right. All the walls are made out of cob.
You've spread a tarp out here, I imagine. We'll be doing some mixing
as
well.
This is the tarp method.
Well, let's get dirty.
We're going to get dirty. Let's go do it.
I'm guessing they've never heard of steel-toed boots, and I don't have steel toes.
Right in the middle, Conrad?
Yeah. You can spread it out a little bit over the tarp.
All right.
You're doing great so far, Mike.
Thanks.
And I'll come up with the clay. We like to do the sand first, because the clay sometimes sticks to the tarp and it's...
Oh, yeah, it'd be a shame to make a mess.
That's right. Now we're going to gently rock this back and forth.
Okay.
Just to kind of become a human cement mixture. A little water to it, and we're gonna put your feet in there and kind of do a little bit of a twisting motion,
like the twist
and shout, and you're gonna try to flatten out this pile, and I'm gonna make a pile.
So we appear to be at cross purposes here, Conrad.
Exactly.
I'm trying to flatten, and you're trying to mount.
Yeah, we're getting that way. We're getting the double mixing action.
Gotcha.
And now I'm going to get some straw for you, and we're going to put some straw in. Now, the easiest way to do this is you just stick the straw under your arm. And you just keep doing that, and every now and then you kind of casually drop some in there. And you work the straw in there. One-third to half of the world population still lives in places like this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all over Africa, Central and South America, and Southeast Asia. Many, many people live in houses that is essentially made from these materials. How are your feet doing, Mike?
Oh, I can't feel anything from my knees down, to be honest with you. So they're doing great.
You're right where you should be then.
No, this is good, actually. All the way over?
Sure. There you have it, Mike. Your first batch of cob.
All right.
You almost know everything there's to know now.
Yeah, that's me. Mr. Knowledge. So she's making cobs right now, Conrad. These are the cobs in question.
That's right, the loaf of material. You just get a lump of material and you go like this.
That's it.
That's it.
That's a cob.
That's a cob.
Oh, I can do that. I mean, this is heavy. Feels almost as heavy as concrete.
It is. It's a heavy material.
You can basically build, you know, a 400 or 500 square foot house out of cob for, what, a few grand?
Yeah. Actually, I think the term is dirt cheap.
Dirt cheap! Typically, I take care of the jokes in this format, but it's...
Next comes the tossing of the cob, or where the cob meets the wall.
Never too early.
Don't worry, it's cob.
We're going to press it into as much as we can in the harder layer below there.
Yeah, but you're messing up the perfect cobs we made.
That's the whole point.
So the cobs come together, sacrificing their own identity for the greater common good of the home.
You know.
Perhaps I'm giving the cob too much credit on a self-actualized basis, but I'm just trying to make it human. This is a cobblestone. I'm using it in lieu of my thumb to integrate the many individual cobs that are now becoming a part of what we hope to be a monolithic structure, the cob house.
What do you want to do next? Want to keep building?
I don't know. Let's make a fire. Roast some marshmallows. Some s'mores. Sing kumbaya. All right. We're making houses. We're making friends. Give me some more cob.
These walls right now, they're going straight up. But what we actually like to do with cob walls is to put a little bit of taper in them.
You basically want me to saw the mud off.
Saw the mud off. So you cut a little bit off and check it again with your level.
Half a bubble off plumb there, maybe. I just can't believe it.
Look at that. That's nice.
Yeah?
That's nice. Yeah.
Plumb. I don't know what I was thinking. I'm just imagining a mud house. It'd be kind of dark on the inside, but this is going to be, you know.
I have lots of windows.
Right.
And in fact, the windows are important to let the sun in to warm up the house. We can just set the window on the cob and build the cob around it.
Once the window is braced,
I'll build on this side.
It's simply a matter of some strategically placed cobs, precision teamwork, and in no time at all.
Look at this window. We're putting a window in a cob house. Man, I'm feeling handy today.
Coming up. Oh.
A hunk of crap just flew straight down my throat.
Then, for a male honeybee, there's no such thing as safe sex.
It's called popping the drone when his genitalia is ripped out, but their genes are in the pool.
Cold comfort, my friend.
And later, I find out that beans can give you more than one kind of gas. So far in my day of cob home building, I had mixed mud, sand, and straw with my bare feet, formed it into so-called cobs, built the cobs into a wall, tapered the wall for strength, even installed a window, and most importantly, no poo whatsoever. I like this job.
So we're back to the sand pile at this point to start the plaster process?
Correct. When I put an earthen plaster on the cob walls, there are other options too. You can do lime plaster or combinations of lime and earth. But I like to mostly use clay and sand. And we also make a different consistency. It's going to be more like a cake batter type consistency.
So more clay, less sand.
No, actually, it's the opposite.
Well, I had a 50-50 shot.
Yeah, it's more sand than clay. If you put too much clay in it, the plaster is going to crack.
This looks like clay. This looks like clay. That does not look like clay.
That is. This is not clay. This is a cow manure. We're also going to make a cow manure plaster, which is used in many traditional African cultures.
We're in Washington.
What's so funny about that?
I don't know what they think when they poo, but I doubt that any are hoping that
they'll end up on the wall.
Right, exactly.
That business before about the poo, never mind.
That feels very nice.
Oh, yeah.
So we're going to fill the bucket up to about
this level with cow manure.
Uh-huh.
And it's important that the cow manure is fresh, because the enzymes...
That's fresh.
...work better to make it into a sticky plaster. You can use your hands, too. It's not... It's just
cow crap.
It's just cow crap.
You don't want to get a high-speed drill with the manure, you know.
No, you don't.
Going all over
you
the
don't
place.
Want that. I'm not even sure I want this.
It smells a little, huh?
Yeah, it does. Well, it's probably the cow s***.
Most likely.
Looks good.
Yeah. Looks good. If you're a horsefly.
At what point do we put our shoes back on?
That won't be till midnight. It's usually a big ceremony.
Oh, I see. Late night cob party dancing in the moonlight thing.
Exactly.
Right here?
Yeah, that's fine.
Is it plaster or is it poo?
Yeah. Oh!
How to respond to that, to tell you the truth. New low.
What happened?
On the nicest little segment I've ever done on this show, a hunk of crap just flew straight down my throat. Oh. I blame you primarily.
Don't drop the bucket like that.
What? You know what? Yeah, I've never met a guy full of more useful tips at a more useless time.
It's outside. The plastering is actually one of the nicest parts of the building process.
So far, it's been a dream.
And just for the record, it doesn't smell any better after you put it on the wall.
Got a cold?
I might be coming down with something. Some bovine disease. Not hoof and mouth, but more rare. Poop and mouth. I got the poop and mouth disease. Now, how long does it take before the cob house stops smelling like the southbound end of a northbound cow?
Oh, it can be a couple of weeks. But generally, the smell is not bad.
No, generally it's not. Specifically, it is. It's a good-looking wall, though.
What do you think, Mike? Are you ready to build your own?
Why would I do that when I got somebody like you standing by, all ready to get dirty? Actually, I'd love one.
They make beautiful homes.
It's been a real treat.
Me too. Thank you, Mike.
They say it'll take about a year to complete this house. However, this is a finished Cobb house. Not only is it a beauty, but it has all the plumbing and electrical conveniences of a traditionally built home. And the price is definitely right. About $13 per square foot for the home I helped build today. So, here's the mud in your house. Now, about that indoor plumbing.
For the last 50 years, the good people of Cupertino, California have been congregating here every Sunday morning to worship and give thanks at the First Baptist Church.
But this church has another congregation whose members never leave. Bees. A huge colony of honeybees has taken up residence in a wall of the old Parsons home on church property. So they've called in David Williams, the bee man of San Jose, an expert at removing all kinds of stinging pests. David and I are going to hit those bees where they live. For that, David uses a laser-guided heat sensor.
The bees are coming and going right up there where I've got the laser, but where they actually are is here.
So we're looking at a hive, probably, about the size of that top corner.
There's a hot spot right about, the brood chamber is right about there. Compared to if you go over here, the ambient temperature of the wall is 63, 64 degrees. But where the bees are up there, see, right there, it's 70.5.
Are they mainly girl bees or boy bees in there?
Well, they're 99.whatever% female. There's a queen in there, and whether it's the... If it's the old queen, it's her daughters. If it's a new queen, it's her sisters. But eventually, everybody in there will be her daughters.
Very Roman.
Yes.
Incestuous.
Yeah. So, I mean, a couple drones are taking care of business for the whole hive.
Well, they will raise enough drones simply to mate with the queen. Once a queen mates with maybe half a dozen drones, then she becomes an egg-laying machine and doesn't fly out anymore. A drone, when he mates with the queen in the air, is called popping the drone. And you can actually hear it pop when his genitalia is ripped out and he peels off of her back, crashes, and the next suitor comes up and mates with her. She goes home and stays in. She becomes a homebody.
She's just a thoughtless, murdering wretch.
Coming up, those bees are going to get it as soon as we get this scaffolding up.
It's perfect.
Then, food for thought and fuel for your car the next time you eat out.
Some kitchens, they never even look at this area.
So you're talking to a guy that eats out 7 days a week. I don't want to know that.
Once David the Bee Man had located the hive, we were ready to take on the bees. But to get to them, we needed to set up some scaffolding. Should be a cinch, right?
Usually do this alone?
Yes. I've got the loneliest job in the world.
I'm just guessing, David, but am I missing something obvious here?
Well, as I say, something is not right here.
Yeah, I think we may have violated some basic geometry. It's perfect. I think it's going rather well.
Yes, isn't it, though? It's quite stable once you get the bloody thing put together.
Solid as a rock, David.
Yes.
I think we're going to be just fine up here.
See, it still wants to be a parallelogram. It shouldn't be doing that.
I think we've just created a new geometric design. Are we sure these don't go on the outside?
Well, if all else fails, try something now.
Oh, we're coming. We're coming. We'll get there.
Hello. No, what? Well, I've tried various and sundry things, even tried to put the bars on the outside. It's still, the end pieces, I'm over off of Miller Avenue. Well, I've got it sort of stuck back together. Exactly, because I remember the last time. Okay, now I've got one of the bars off.
Of course, seems so obvious now.
Actually, I think this is going to be just about where we want it.
Oh, yeah, I don't see what could possibly go wrong.
Here, you...
Okay, thank you.
Carry a ladder over there, make it a lot easier to get up and down that scaffolding.
Sure. How long is it going to take to set the ladder up?
The most important part of handling bees is keeping them calm. And beekeepers have learned that nothing calms down a bee like a good smoke. So David uses a canister packed with smoldering burlap to smoke out the hive. The bees will respond by gorging themselves on honey, which causes them to become more docile.
Now, a smoker of some description has been around forever. There are cave paintings in France that show prehistoric, going after the bees with smoking branches.
Huh, so people figured out early on.
The bees and the smoke don't match very good. Every beekeeper has what they consider to be, the best smoke. Burlap, that's what I have in here now. Pine needles, eucalyptus leaves, well-weathered wood. The burlap is good because it is very aromatic. It burns a long time. And it's harder to get because you don't see much burlap anymore.
Really? What is burlap made of, actually?
It's hemp.
Right now in the hive.
They think there's a fire. Get out the dental drill here.
Uh-huh.
I can feel their heat. And then if you go down here, it's noticeably cooler. And the drill came back clean. Go up here a little higher. And there we have honey.
Yeah.
Now the bees are in there right now in a panic.
Well, yeah. I mean, you just ran a drill through their parlor.
And what they do is they immediately start sucking up the honey and repairing the damage. And in probably 20 minutes, other than the hole, you would never know it ever happened.
Really?
And you can hear the bees in there.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they're not happy.
And with that observation, we decided it was a good time to put on our bee suits.
These really do work, more or less?
They're sting resistant, not sting proof.
All right.
Now, let's get up there and really test their temperament. There's the bottom
of the hive. Interesting.
This crude edge is the growing edge, and as they keep working it, it gets more and more refined and deeper. Huh. Oh, yeah, they have recently swarmed again.
Yeah.
See, that's a queen cell.
Right.
And that's another queen cell there. These bees have swarmed again, which accounts for why there's so little population so far. This is the queen cell that has emerged. This is one that's about to emerge. There's an old queen cell, an old queen cell, an old one, an old one, an old one, an old one.
So does each queen cell account for a subsequent swarm?
A subsequent swarm, yes.
Oh, that, yeah.
You got their attention.
I think you might have. Yeah, they're bouncing off me pretty good. You know, when the bees hit you on purpose, they weigh half a gram or something.
They ram you. But now this is characteristic of the bees when they're upset. So they've gone up here and they're just hanging. See the pollen where I cut through?
Right.
They're working, looks like wild mustard. There's a little bit of what looks like roses or something right there.
What do they do with the honey once it's completely honey?
That's their, their bread and butter. That's their food.
Coming up, bees get pollen out of flowers. But how does honey get out of the bees?
They regurgitate it.
Well, now it sounds like an eating disorder.
Then, why am I working in a kitchen? This guy promised me a ride, but I've got to provide the gas.
See the dividing line?
Right.
Right there, goes up, 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 up. Female workers, drones. This is all drone. And then they stopped raising drones, and then they put honey in the cells afterwards.
When you say raise drones, I mean, you can't give birth to a drone on purpose, can you?
Well, actually, the queen can determine the sex of her offspring at will when she lays the egg.
Really? Now, are the rest of the bees in here protecting?
Oh, there are even more queen cells. My God, they have really swarmed.
This is like the that movie with the alien. Now, that's some very pretty honeycomb.
Yes.
Beautiful. Looks a little like California.
There you go.
I believe I've just been stung on the ass, David. All in all, they're taking it rather well. A couple of giants stopped by, tore their house in half.
Yes, well, they're starting to get a little cranky.
I don't think they enjoy that, Dave. I don't think bees like being scraped off at all. How does the honey come out of the bee?
Well, the bees go out and collect up the honey in what's called their honey stomach. You know, like the absolute pinhead of super dilute, nectar.
Mm-hmm.
They bring it back, deposit it in a cell, and have nothing else to do with it.
So how do they get it out of their honey stomach?
They regurgitate it.
It's honey's vomit.
No, that's the old thing about it's bee vomit. No, it's just simply they have a honey stomach, and then they can voluntarily contract that sac and bring the nectar back up.
Well, now it sounds like an eating disorder. that's a handful of bees.
You can feel them buzzing and everything through the gloves, and then just
drop them. If you found the queen and you took her, wouldn't they follow?
Yeah, they will stay in the box more readily. The queen is not a leader in the sense that we think of as a queen. She is the focus of the colony rather than its, ordained leader or whatever. The queen lives and dies at the deference of her daughters. If they don't like her for whatever reason, sure, pheromones have gotten weak, or for whatever reason, they're not above assassinating her and raising a new queen.
There's an awful lot about the whole bee sociology that really does smack of pagan Rome. There's clear betrayal, there's a lot of sex, coupled with a lot of violence, and almost constant vomiting.
Yeah. Well, I think we're at that point of diminishing return.
I feel that way all the time.
Yeah.
It's got a bit of weight to it, these bees. And you put a little air hole in here, too.
Yeah, see, actually, they have the ultimate in cross ventilation. This is really beautiful stuff right here. The ultimate aficionado way to eat it is to chew it right in the comb.
Really?
That's good. You know a piece?
Matter of fact, I do.
And just chew it like bubble gum.
Really?
Take it and chew it like just
there. I gotta tell you, it's absolutely delicious.
And that business about getting your genitals ripped out in mid-flight, you were kidding about that, right?
No, from the bee's point of view, unfortunately not.
Have I got a deal for you? Take a look at this 1982 Datsun King Cab. Diesel. Slightly used. 177,000 miles. Original engine. But check this out. 40 miles to the gallon. And when you need to fill her up, you don't have to take it to a service station. No, no, you can bring it right here to Diego's Mexican Grill and Takeout in Bellingham, Washington. Make me an offer.
When this truck takes to the streets, it doesn't burn a drop of gasoline. That's because it runs on biodiesel, a clean-burning alternative fuel whose main ingredient is not so clean, used cooking oil. And since the name of the show is Dirty Jobs, I went to where the dirty oil is, the kitchen at Diego's.
When I was a kid, I used to think Mexican food smelled like dirty socks, but now I love it. I eat it two, sometimes three times a week, and this is the kitchen here at Diego's, and this is Bob. You're the chef, right?
Yes, I am, Mike.
What's the first thing you do when you get your day started?
Clean my fryer.
So this is your deep fryer?
Yes, it is.
This is the oil that you used to cook yesterday's food?
Right. We gotta put some fresh oil in here.
And you can't put in the fresh oil till you get out the not-so-fresh oil?
Exactly.
All right. What's the routine?
This hose right here gets twisted onto there.
How hot does the oil get?
350 degrees.
It's pretty hot. What kind of oil do you use?
Soybean oil.
Love the soybean. Is that tight enough or should I go another
round? No, that's just right.
How often do you change the oil? Every day?
I change it about twice a week.
So you change the oil in a fryer a little more than you change the oil in a car?
Oh, absolutely.
So I'm looking basically to stir the sediment?
Right. You want to bring it into the oil a little bit because it'll make it drain better. At the same time, you open up that drain.
All right, I'm taking it to the dumpster. When Bob looks at these containers of greasy oil, all he sees are containers of greasy oil. But remember that truck we saw a little bit earlier? Well, when the owner of that truck looks at this oil, he sees something altogether different.
Coming up, if you want to save money at the gas pump...
That's the sound of biodiesel.
Pump this.
Nasty. Or I should say, yummy. That's the good stuff.
Yeah, you better get your adjectives straight.
To me, the stuff that I cleaned out of the deep fryer at Diego's is just used cooking oil and a filthy mess. But to the owner of the truck we saw earlier, it's a source of biodiesel fuel and a way around the high prices at the pump. But unfortunately, there's no such thing as a free lunch here at Diego's, or in this case, free cooking oil. I had a kitchen to clean.
Well, what we're going to do is get a couple of buckets of water and fill this up and start scrubbing. So this is the elbow grease part.
Gotcha.
Don't be concerned with the outside
yet. Did we
ever clean
this, by the way?
Oh, yes. We'll get to that.
Crap. All right. Now, is this like an invisible shadow you're going to tell me about later?
That actually comes off. That green scrubby takes that off like nobody's business.
Got a little bit of torque on it. What do you do with the floor, by the way? Because I'm sliding around here like Tonya Harding.
Well, it's a little spillage from the water.
Kitchen is a hot place to work, isn't it, Bob?
Can't stand the heat.
Get out of here.
Get out of my kitchen.
Cleaning a deep fryer in a Mexican restaurant. It's a dirty job.
Put some clean gloves on.
You think surgeons have this kind of problem?
be very awkward in the operating room. Not yet, nurse. Not quite ready.
Nicely done.
It's perfect.
Yes.
Everywhere I look, I see sharp corner, sharp corner, sharp corner, million degrees. You gotta be careful. Don't most accidents happen in the kitchen? Or the bathroom? In my place, it's definitely the bathroom. I have had some accidents.
Well, I wish we had more time to explore that.
Yeah, me too. Pity. This, to the average person, would look to be a real mess.
Oh, this is nothing. Every 2 weeks, we'll pull this apart and clean it real well. Some kitchens, they never even look at this area.
Ah, so you're talking to a guy that eats out 7 days a week. I don't want to know that. Curse words and some funny faces. We'll have a clean grill in no time.
Sweetheart of Smeg Mackay.
Right about now, the soaring prices at the gas pump don't seem so bad. After recovering over 50 gallons of used cooking oil and scrubbing my fingers to the bone, my ride to the biodiesel processing plant had finally arrived.
How's it going, Bruce?
Hey, doing well. Good to see you.
It's Bruce Barber. He's the proud owner. Did I get it right? A 1982 Datsun King Cab.
Diesel King Cab.
How many miles on her again?
About 177,000.
What's your secret?
Biodiesel.
What is biodiesel exactly?
Processed vegetable oil. It's vegetable oil without the sticky stuff in it.
In real simple terms, what have you done here?
Well, actually, I've not really done anything to the engine. That's one of the beauties of biodiesel, that is that you can use it in any diesel engine.
This is the diesel engine that came with this car
23 years ago, and it continues to run, and will continue to run longer because the biodiesel actually adds more lubrication to the engine.
How have you converted this to work?
Well, on an older vehicle like this, you need to change your fuel lines. This is a synthetic line. You can see it's very flexible. This is an old rubber line that's still surviving somehow.
Right.
The biodiesel actually dissolves rubber. It's an unbelievably good solvent. And diesels are a little different than gasoline engines in that they use no spark to ignite the fuel. They use compression only.
So when you're running down the street burning Diego's,
oh, yeah,
it smells like a burrito.
All right. Generally makes people hungry when they smell my exhaust.
Now, my exhaust has a completely different bouquet to it.
This is just a small rotary pump that we'll use to move the grease.
I got a great feeling about this.
Oh, yeah.
This is your normal pickup?
Yeah. Some of the restaurants still have some of these, and nasty. Or I should say, yummy. That's the good stuff.
Yeah, you better get your adjectives straight. So all of this oil, by the end of the day, is going to be converted into biodiesel?
Yep, not a problem. Soybean is the most common, canola oil, and peanut oil. Chemically, the best oil would be mustard seed oil. They're all chemically just a little different, but when you're making biodiesel,
the engine doesn't know any different.
The engine doesn't notice, no.
Holy smokes. That's the device? It's the only garage I've ever been in with. What is this again, exactly?
This is a biodiesel processor.
A BDP?
A BDP.
When all is said and done, what's a gallon of biodiesel actually cost to make?
With this setup, the materials, assuming that you're getting your oil for free like we did today, will be about 55 cents a gallon.
55 cents a gallon. And how many miles per gallon does our Datsun get?
It gets about 40 miles a gallon.
That's pretty good.
That's not bad.
All right, Bruce. Well, just no need to let the neighbors in. Your whole place here is like a glazed donut.
There you go.
I've never seen a transparent one before. I'm going to pour the grease, fresh from Diego's fine Mexican restaurant,
straight into this colander, where all the excess food particles are separated from the oil.
What's the actual name of this part?
That's a reactor vessel, it's officially called.
We're not in the business of wasting things, Bruce. Every last drop. Well, maybe not every last drop. Minutes ago, the grease in this outside reactor was inside of a deep fryer in Diego's restaurant. Now it's draining out through the bottom. It's going through this pipe right here and up this hose, down through this pipe, up through that pump, through this pipe, around this corner, and through that large hose, comes outside around the reactor, goes through this elbow thingy and through this pipe, then it goes round and round and round through another thinner hose, all the way up to a holding tank at the very top. From there, it sits until the biodiesel-making process begins in earnest, at which point it's pulled down through another hose, this guy right here, into this 55-gallon blue oil drum, where all the different types of cooking oils are heated to 130 degrees and then pumped back into the bioreactor vessel, where the oils are fused together, making a consistent blend. Coming up, I'm introduced to the gyrotherm.
Spins a little steel table in there.
Like a Mexican jumping beam.
And later, I consider the road not taken.
I'm beginning to think I could have been a scientist.
Well, this is a little magnetic stirring table and heater.
What the hell is going on here? What is it again? This is a magnet?
That's a magnet.
And you turn it on and it sends a current?
It spins a little steel table in there.
Like a Mexican jumping bean. Well, that is just ingenious.
That's pretty cool. You can add the oil now and get her blending.
I believe I'm still kind of blown away by the gyrotherm here. Why aren't these in kitchens all across America? Why do people still have, you know, beaters and blenders? Why don't they just hook up a big magnet?
There's a whole new business for you right there. There you go.
So my little magnet is still spinning like crazy down there.
All right, you can see that it creates a little vortex and circulates the stuff pretty nicely.
Thermometer says 123 degrees.
There you go. So we'll add a little more heat. It's cooled down just a little bit.
You can heat this as well.
That's right.
This is a hot plate and a...
And a mixer. You can make soup. What else could you make with that?
Oh, I mean, you can make top ramen. You
top ramen. Make,
well, how about a cocktail? I mean, how about a martini?
No, you're talking. What time is it? Let's go.
Biodiesel makes a man thirsty.
It does, indeed. Now we get to do a little chemistry.
I thought we were doing chemistry. Or was this science?
Oh, this is... Yeah, we were doing the science. Now we're doing chemistry.
Christ, I can't tell anything apart anymore. Science, chemistry. I failed them both.
The next step in the fuel-making process is adding methanol and lye to the oil. But the tricky part is figuring out how much is needed, since every batch is unique. Bruce calls this titration testing. That's science talk for mixing.
All right, sure.
That'll keep it mixed up.
The reason titration is necessary is because the oil in question has come from several different restaurants. Could be soybean, could be canola, could be peanut oil.
And we don't know how acidic it has become. Every time it gets heated up in that French fryer, it gets a little more acidic.
And so, right. And some restaurants change their oil every couple days, others every week.
Is that right?
Lots of variables. So we have some pink fluid here next to kind of an amber color. Right.
As soon as we turn pink, we know that we reached pH 8.5, and that was our goal. That's what we wanted to hit. And now we're going to make a mini batch.
A mini batch of biodiesel.
Yeah, we do that because if we've made a mistake in our titration or our math over here, then it'll show up in the mini batch instead of in the big tank. Just shake a little bit at a time.
The first step in making our mini batch is to mix the methanol and lye together to create what Bruce calls methoxide. The methoxide is then blended together with the cooking oil, and when that happens, the methoxide causes the good oil to rise to the top and the black gunk you wouldn't want in your engine to sink to the bottom.
It'll create a black layer on the bottom, which is the glycerin. It looks like we've got separation. We've got the methyl esters on top, and you can see that dark layer of glycerin on the bottom.
That's the glycerin. This is reacting in the exact way that big 50-gallon tank ought to react if we put a larger relative version of this in it.
That's the theory, and I'm pretty confident now that we've made a small batch, so we're going to have success making a big batch now.
Okay.
Now we're going to add the lye to the methoxide tank.
Right.
Here, put your goggles on first, though.
Okay.
If only my seventh grade science teacher could see me now.
15 minutes, huh?
That's it. Kind of like watching paint dry, isn't it?
I'm beginning to think I could have been a scientist.
With the flip of a switch, the methoxide is now injected into our oil.
There we go.
The
methoxide's in, so turn the injection pump off.
Now we wait for the oil and the glycerin to separate. Okay.
So 2 hours from now, the grease that was in the Mexican restaurant should be ready to power any one of your three diesel vehicles.
That's about right. We'll be doing that, too.
What do you want to do for the next 2 hours? You were right. I could have been a scientist. So just like that, 2 hours have flown by here in the garage. And we are right at the point where I think we have something usable.
So we created glycerin and biodiesel. The glycerin now weighs more than the biodiesel, so it settles to the bottom.
This is glycerin.
Black goo. See how slow it's going now. As soon as the biodiesel's in the hose, it'll turn a light color, gold color, and it'll start to flow a lot faster.
How much glycerin is going to come out?
Well, we produce about 20% by volume, so we've got a 50-gallon tank. We'll eventually end up with about 10 gallons, but this round we'll probably pull off about 5.
What is glycerin exactly?
It's a commonly used product in a lot of face creams, toothpastes. Yeah. The really refined stuff is absolutely clear, and they put it in dials of meters and things like that.
Really?
Yeah.
So what we have right now is pure, unadulterated biodiesel.
Biodiesel.
Want to fill something up? So this is how it works. Back the car up, you fill the car up, and at 40 miles a gallon, you do it, what, once a month?
Yeah, you're lucky.
Well, what's the plan here? I mean, how far ahead of the curve are you?
We can use the biodiesel to heat our garage and our house. We can use the biodiesel to generate electricity, and we can do it cheaper than the electric company can. So we're done. Now we can drive away.
What's this capacity?
About 12 gallons.
And you get 40 miles a gallon?
40 miles a gallon. So we'll be back in 500.
500 miles to the tank?
Yeah.
Not bad. Not bad at all.
Okay, let's review. Grease from Diego's, dirty. Diesel, also dirty. Biodiesel, very, very clean. And here's the best part. When you're stuck in traffic driving biodiesel, it smells like fajitas.
Like some of us don't know what tastes like. What?
You work on this job and you don't know what tastes like. That's a good one.
Stupid camera's so heavy. God, everything sucks. God, I hate my job. I hate these people. I hate God.
Why does a chicken coop have two doors?
I don't know.
Because if it had four doors, it'd be a chicken sedan.